This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on August 29, 2006. Should you have questions after listening to this recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Our next item of business this morning is a couple of advisory opinions. The first one, Advisory Opinion 2006-21, which is submitted by Cantwell 2006 and Matthew S. Butler as campaign manager. We have Robert Knopp, S. Severa, and Dwayne Pugh from the General Counsel's Office on this matter. And, Mr. Vice Chairman, we have a late-submitted document with respect to this AO.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move for the suspension of the rules for the timely submission of documents to consider Agenda Document 06-55A.
Vice Chairman is so moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries by a vote of all six commissioners present. Mr. Knopp, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Agenda documents 0655 and 0655A respond to an advisory opinion request from Cantwell 2006. Cantwell 2006 is the principal campaign committee of Senator Maria Cantwell from Washington State. Senator Cantwell is running in the upcoming Democratic primary against five other Democratic candidates. That election will be held on September 19th. That date is also the date of the Republican primary in Washington State. There are six Republicans running in the Republican primary. One of those candidates is Michael McGavick, who has loaned his campaign $2 million. Senator Cantwell's committee anticipates that the McGavick campaign will spend a significant amount of his personal funds on communications attacking Senator Cantwell prior to the September 19th primary. The committee asks two questions. First, the committee asks whether Senator Cantwell may consider any of the expenditures Mr. McGavick makes before the primary to be in connection with the general election. The draft concludes that she may not, because those expenditures are in connection with the primary election only, and Mr. McGavick is not Senator Cantwell's opposing candidate in the primary. Second, the committee asks whether any personal funds that remain in a campaign's account for the general election will count toward the general election threshold for Millionaire's Amendment purposes. The draft concludes that they will and goes on to say that both campaigns must use a reasonable accounting method to determine the portion of their cash on hand that constitutes the candidate's personal funds. The amendment in Agenda Document 06-55A would simply add a reference to one of the Commission's presidential candidate expenditure regulations in the answer to the committee's first question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Knopp. Discussion of the drafts before us. Are we prepared to entertain a motion? Commissioner Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make a couple of points about this request, and of course we have a similar request from Senator Kyle pending, which just I think goes to confirm that this cuts either way in terms of parties. Self-finance candidates aren't the province of one party or the other. First, there's an argument, essentially the fundamental argument that's being made here is a fairness argument. I mean, there are a lot of technical arguments having to do with the state of the ballot, and for instance, the state of the ballot is different apparently in Arizona than it is here, and some factual differences have been raised there about, alleged anyway, about the content of the ads. But it sort of revolves around the generic argument that McGavick is using this money to attack Cantwell, and so it ought to be fair for Senator Cantwell to be able to take advantage of the increased election limits. And I think the big problem with an appeal to fairness over the specific technical requirements of the statute and the rule is that Congress drew a very detailed statute, an incredibly detailed statute, designed to ensure fairness. It's very clear that was what they were trying to do, because they put in variable limits based on the state size, the primary versus the general election, this cash on hand advantage, which is calculated differently for the general election and the primary. And so Congress set up a structure designed to try to achieve fairness. And so we can't, in an effort to seek fairness, ignore the structure that Congress set up, even when we look at it and say in certain circumstances it may produce somewhat anomalous results. I also want to note that Congress was not unconscious of specifically this problem when they passed the bill. Because before the bill was passed, I made a speech, which I was criticized about for various reasons by various people, which, among other things, brought attention to the provisions of the Millionaires Amendment and its possible consequences. And I used, as an example, the Cantwell-Gorton race, in which Senator Cantwell, in her initial campaign, spent about $10 million financing her own race, and noted that a wealthy candidate with good legal advice might postpone the triggering effects of this amendment, the Millionaires Amendment, until well into the general election period. In states with late primaries, this might postpone increases in contribution limits until October, and then went on to analyze that in the Washington race, under the statute, Senator Cantwell would have been eligible to receive increased contributions just within the last couple of weeks of the race, despite then-candidate Cantwell's spending of $10 million on the race. I laid this all out in some detail, and Congress passed the statute, you know, in the form that it is now. It's very difficult to then come back and say, well, Congress didn't mean this or didn't understand it. I also want to note that the situation, as I pointed out 6 years ago, works very differently when you have early primaries versus late primaries. And yet Congress imposed the law. They didn't put that in as a factor, and we normally wouldn't. And, in fact, I had raised the question about the amendment, which is in Agenda Document 0655A, having to do with the analogy to the primary and general election rules for presidential candidate expenditures, where the commission had a long and somewhat tortured history of trying to sort out when expenditures in publicly funded campaigns were going to be allocated to the primary and when they were allocated to the general election. And after years and years and years of trying, we finally came down to a bright line date of nomination rule, concluding that no other rule was workable. And that simply points out by analogy that we're following a consistent approach here in the Millionaire Amendment regulation, and that Congress should have been aware when they passed the Millionaire Amendment that this was the way we distinguish between primary and general election expenditures. And so I think this is the right outcome, but I just, because a lot of the atmospherics about this have focused not on the details of the amendment, but on this overall fairness issue, I simply wanted to point out that the statute doesn't say be fair. It's intended to do that, and in fact we've gone a long way to try to ensure fairness by, for instance, in a prior AO, saying that funds that are carried over by the primary candidate are going to be counted to the general election spending limit. I think that's a reasonable conclusion. It was certainly an effort to achieve fairness on our part. It was not the only way we could have concluded under the statute. We could have gone the other way. But I simply want to bring up the fact that this could create another problem. Because the cash on hand or the funds received calculation is calculated differently for the primary and the general election, not only is it possible for the self-financing candidate to carry funds forward from the primary to the general, it's also possible for the incumbent candidate to carry primary money forward from the primary to the general election. And so we could reach a situation where we said, well, the self-financing candidate has to do a carry-forward calculation, and we could reach the same conclusion as to the incumbent. Now, with a late primary in September, as in Washington State, the likelihood is the primary money will be gone or substantially gone by the time the primary occurs. But in a state with a March primary, there's a very good chance that money would be carried over. And so my point is that the further we try to go in crafting more and more exceptions and rules to try to reach exact fairness, the more complicated we make an already complicated structure, and the more we run into a danger of anomalous results depending, for instance, on the primary date. Because we've already done one thing that in terms of the carryover, that'll have a different effect with a late primary than an early primary, and I don't think we want to go further down that road. Lastly, I just want to note that in this particular case, our conclusion might not make a whole lot of difference, because as I've mentioned, the gross receipts calculation is done separately for the primary and the general election. Senator Cantwell had very substantial receipts for the primary election last year, such that Mr. McGavick would have to spend not $2 million, but $3.6 million in the primary before triggering a right, if we held Senator Cantwell to have such a right, for her to receive additional funds. And so in this particular case, while I think we've come to the right rule, in this particular case, even if we read the rule as Senator Cantwell urges, she would still not be eligible for increased funding until candidate McGavick had spent over $3.6 million in personal funds, and to date it's something around $2 million. That, Mr. Chairman, I may have sparked further interest, perhaps not put everyone to sleep, but I'd be happy to move approval of the draft advisory opinion with the amendment set forth in Agenda Document 0655A.
Thank you, Commissioner Mason. No danger of anybody falling asleep when we talk about the Millionaire's Amendment. I share Commissioner Mason's thoughts and observations about the conundrum we often find ourselves in construing the Millionaire's Amendment. I don't think it's a stretch to conclude that it's the most Byzantine part of the federal election laws. And that's probably saying something, given the other provisions we've worked with over the years. But as Commissioner Mason noted, the key statutory phrase that we're faced with here is expenditures from personal funds made by an opposing candidate. That's what triggers the Millionaire Amendment provisions. And as Commissioner Mason noted, we've historically viewed candidacy election cycle by election cycle, so separate analysis for the primaries and the general election. And I think it's important to note that when the Commission implemented the interim regulations for the Millionaire's Amendment in 2002, we saw comment on whether this interpretation was appropriate. And maybe this is not that surprising, but we've received no comments to date in the last 4 years on the Millionaire's Amendment. People clearly had other things that they were focusing on. But I think the point is an important one. We reserved the issue for comment, and we took our best shot at it in 2002 in terms of interpreting the statute. I personally think it's the most appropriate interpretation, and we would have the ability to come back later in a final rule if we got comments and other people thought that the statute should be interpreted otherwise. But I think it's a very difficult area of the law. I think, however we come out in interpreting these kinds of statutory interpretations, I don't think we're ever going to achieve total fairness. I'm sure Congress is deeply committed to continuing that work in the campaign finance area, but I'm comfortable with the draft before us and am prepared to support it. Additional thoughts on the issues before us? And I know Commissioner Mason has moved approval, but additional thoughts? All right, Commissioner Mason has moved approval of Agenda Document 0655 as amended by Agenda Document 0655A in Advisory Opinion 2006-21. Further discussion on Commissioner Mason's motion. Commissioner Walter.
I just add, I agree with both your comments. I think that it really doesn't give much wiggle room the way the law is drafted in any event. I think we're bound to follow the language. And yes, there are some many inequities, and we haven't received comment from everybody, but I think a lot of people are still trying to figure it out after all these years. Maybe we'll get comment one of these days. But right now I think we have no choice but to go ahead and approve the opinion as it stands.
Thank you, Commissioner Walther. Further discussion on the motion to approve? Hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries by a vote of 6-0. Thank you, Mr. Nye.
Thank you. Sure.
Our next item of business this morning is Draft Advisory Opinion 2006-26, which is sought by Texans for Henry Bonilla and by counsel from the esteemed law firm of Wiley, Ryan, Fielding, Jan Barron. And we have Mr. Levin from the counsel's office this morning. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, and I apologize. I think we have a late submitted document on this matter. So, Mr. Vice Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move for the suspension of the rules for the timely submission of documents to consider agenda document 06-56.
Vice Chairman, so moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries by a vote of 6-0. Mr. Levin, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Commission has received an advisory opinion request from counsel for Texans for Henry Bonilla, the principal campaign committee of Representative Bonilla, for re-election to the U.S. House of Representatives. On August 4, 2006, a federal court redrew the boundaries of Representative Bonilla's district and four other congressional districts and ordered that a special general election be held on November 7, 2006, in place of the regular general election. The new special general election is open to all who qualify for the ballot per the court order and is not limited to those who had won the primary, such as Representative Bonilla. The Bonilla Committee asks whether the limits on contributions to it for the newly scheduled special general election are separate and distinct from the contribution limits that applied to the regular general election. The draft answers yes. The draft finds that Representative Bonilla's situation is materially indistinguishable from the situation presented by the previously nominated candidates in advisory opinions 1996-36 and 1996-37. Accordingly, the draft concludes that one limit applies to contributions made for the regular general election to the Bonilla Committee as of the date of the court's order, which was August 4th, and another limit applies to contributions made for the special general election to the Bonilla Committee after the date of the court's order. However, a committee may not determine its net debts outstanding as of August 4th and collect contributions after that date that are designated for the regular general election. The draft also states that a contribution received by the Bonilla Committee for the March primary need not be aggregated with the contribution received for the regular general or special general election, and that unused contributions from previous elections in 2006 need not be redesignated for the special general election. I will respond to any questions you have.
Thank you, Mr. Levin. Discussion of the draft advisory opinion. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you. I guess I'd like to raise two points. First is that the conclusion that we reach in this is the same conclusion the Commission reached in a unanimous advisory opinion that was issued in 1996, addressing strikingly similar factual facts, and as a consequence does not strike me as a particularly surprising result. The thing that I think is somewhat different and worthy of note is that that the decision that we're reaching today is a product of a slight change in the processes here. In the last 6-8 months, we made a number of changes to how the agency operates, and one of them is to begin to handle some of the advisory opinions on an expedited basis. To the degree that there are facts that make the issue particularly pressing, we've tried to accelerate the time frame in which we reach a resolve on that. In this particular case, approximately 8 days after we received the request, we issued a draft that we are now considering today, and 4 days later we're voting on it. And this is, I think, in large part a product of a lot of hard work on the staff. It puts an additional burden on our lawyers to try and identify, cull out these cases, and then try and reach a resolve and present to us a proposal in a really expedited time period. And I think the advantage to this is it provides participants in the electoral process with more timely and effective sense of what the law is on areas where there is some uncertainty. And so I did not want this to pass without expressing my appreciation to the staff in our legal department for putting in additional efforts and times in trying to move these matters forward.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman, and I share your thoughts. I think that when we can dispose of an advisory opinion in 12 days on an election-sensitive issue, that's exactly where we should be as an agency, and I want to thank everybody for their work in making that happen. You know, the statute gives you the right to an advisory opinion in 60 days, or in certain circumstances, 20 days, but when a federal court redraws your boundaries in the middle of the cycle, you may need an answer sooner than that. And so I really appreciate the effort of everybody at the agency to get an answer promptly to the requester here. Additional discussion? Is there a motion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move approval.
Commissioner Weintraub moves approval of agenda document number 0656 regarding advisory opinion 2006-26. Discussion on Commissioner Weintraub's motion. Hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries by a vote of 6-0, and the advisory opinion is approved. Mr. Levin, thank you.
Thank you.